Good afternoon. All right. The Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Adrian, will you please call the roll? I don't know that it worked.
It's not working.
Okay. All right, take two. The Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fine.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Bell.
I'm here.
Representative Lupus.
Here.
Andrade.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Bush.
Here.
Hawkins.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
McLean. Roach.
Present.
Smith.
Here.
Trunow.
Here.
Valdez.
Alert and present.
Willite.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
You have a quorum, ma'am.
Okay, a quorum is present. Please make sure all electronic devices are turned off or are on vibrate. We actually have a short agenda with just two general bills, HB 277 and HB 865. And while I like to start my meetings on time, neither of our bill presenters is here. So we are going to take a, I should have probably checked, which is why you heard the I'm here comment when I realized they weren't here. I said, I'm here, they're not. And so we're going to take a brief recess until one of the two of them gets here, and you're free to clap when they arrive. So we'll take a brief recess until they arrive. We will come back into our meeting. We'll end our brief recess. I feel a little bad, I mean, given he's driving in on a scooter. But we only have two bills today, and Representative Clemens, we will go ahead and get started with you. Someone, all of you, feel free to text Representative Rizzo and let him know he should get on down here, because I don't think Representative Clemens' bill will take us a super long amount of time. We're going to start with HB 277, the Early Childhood Music Education Incentive Pilot Program, by Representative Clemens. Representative Clemens, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Educators and researchers, they agree 100% that exposure to musical experiences earlier in life can benefit overall development of young students. It also helps to build emotional and social skills, builds cognitive skills, increases language capabilities, improves memory, and I can go on and on and on, but I won't. This was a pilot program that was began in 2019. We're not asking through this bill for any money. Because of COVID, our trial program was delayed because of the students not being in school. So all this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is ask for a 12-month extension on this musical education incentive pilot program in Dade County, Alachua County, Leon County, to do what we asked to do in the pilot and to give us the time to expend the funds that the legislature allocated and bring back the results to you. So that's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
All right, having explained his bill, there are no amendments. Members, are there questions on the bill? Yes, Representative Roach, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair Fine. Thank you, Representative. This is the second time I've had the privilege and pleasure of hearing this good bill. And I know in a previous meeting you had offered to sing a few bars for the committee, but we didn't have time in that committee, so I'd like to extend that offer to you now if you'd like to sing a few bars and help this bill just kind of pass along to the next committee.
Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized, and it is a close vote on this,
each and every one of you, but in all modesty, my wife makes me lip sync at birthday parties, so I am not qualified to answer in that particular way. But any other questions are certainly welcome.
So, any other questions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Maney, you're recognized.
I was just going to ask, Mr. Chairman, thank you for recognizing me, but I was just going to ask if Northwest Florida is part of Florida and therefore could be included in the pilot, or is this simply a peninsular thing?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, this pilot program was part of a very valuable exploration program just to make sure that we could do justice to all of the breakthroughs that we know will happen to musical education in the panhandle once this pilot is complete.
All right, are there any additional questions? It's fine, we have to wait for Rep Rizzo anyway, so. Is your, oh, okay, he's here, all right. Okay, seeing no additional questions, we do have two speaker cards today. We have Nancy Lawther with representing Florida PTA, who waves in support, and Samantha Hauer representing herself. She's an arts educator in Lee County, who is waving in support. Members, is there anyone wishing to debate? Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair Fine, and Rep. Clemens. Thank you for bringing forward this bill, and I gladly support the extension of the program so that then we can really utilize these funds to bring back and continue to show the importance how music and arts impact our students' daily lives. If you think about it, that might be the carrot that will entice that student to want to come to school each and every day, that band director, that music teacher, that art teacher. So this is a very important bill. It's very near and dear to my heart. I just wish that school districts would allocate the appropriate funding and we can continue to support the funding for the arts in our schools and continue to have the arts and education be a priority for all of our school districts and our children. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Representative Hawkins, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a great bill. I think if you don't have arts in your community, you really don't have a community. So I will say Osceola is ahead of the game. We have a magnet school called our Tupperware School of the Arts that is very, very successful and going on about 10 years now. We've seen a lot of great things coming there. So thanks for the great bill.
All right. See anyone else? Okay. Seeing no further debate, Representative Clemens, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Briefly, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll never forget Mrs. Spencer. She was the music teacher at High Springs Elementary School. You know, we look so forward to going to music once a week back in those days, Representative Bush. Mrs. Spencer was the first to recognize, General, that I was tone deaf. And she pushed me towards the sticks or the tambourine. And she thought that my future was better there. So I think that each child has a future and can be using this type of curriculum to help them learn and adapt and live their best life ever. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I close.
Representative Clemens, having closed on the bill, Adrian, please call the roll.
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Alupis?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
McLean? Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Trunau?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Willite?
Yeah.
Williams?
Yes.
14, the bill passes, sir.
Favorable. Members, by your vote, HB 277 will be reported favorably.
Thank you, Mr.
Congratulations.
Thank you, members.
All right. Second and final bill is CS for HB 865 regarding charter schools by Representative Rizzo. Representative Rizzo, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Vice Chair, ranking members, or member and members, thank you very much. Thank you for the welcome when I walked in. It was quite heartwarming. HB 865 provides the following. It allows for a new commission to be created at the DOE, which can review charter school applications in order to approve or deny them. It establishes legislative intent that funding levels for students in charter and traditional schools should be comparable. It allows for a school district to require additional financial reporting from a charter school that has been identified as being in a deteriorating financial condition as defined in statute. It also provides language to ensure that charter schools that are fulfilling the commitments of their charter and of their students may not be closed without cause. And finally, it would allow for a longer term of approval. Scratch that, I'm sorry. I don't know why that's in there. Those are the salient points of the bill, sir.
All right, thank you, Representative Rizzo. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Yes, Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Chair Fine, and I have two questions.
Go ahead and ask them both.
Thank you, sir. The first question regards to line 307 to 322, which states that the charter school meets the requirements for the most recent school year. So basically, the scenario that I want to just you affirm or deny that this could happen. You could have a charter school that's an F and F and F. One year gets a B, and then according to lines 308 to 322, they'll get no less than a five-year extension because they had the B because the language says the previous year. And what would be this? Why? How would that be sound educational planning or decision making?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative, thank you. In your scenario, F, 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 then a B, that charter school would have been closed after the second F.
Okay, two Fs then, or two Ds.
It would have been closed after the second F.
Okay, let's go with Ds.
All right, you have follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up. Go with Ds. You're saying that I can be a low-performing school for 2 years, 3 years, 1 year, bring it up 1 year, and then get a five-year renewal? That's what this says.
You recognize.
So, Representative, no. When it comes to low-performing schools, mm-hmm. once a charter school receives a grade of D, there has to be a remediating performance plan in place. And all of those requirements have to be met. The following year, if it's still a D and there has been improvement somehow, it may be allowed to remain open. However, and I don't remember what the point of your original question was if we met those criteria, what would happen next with the renewal?
No, so... You're
recognized.
So you have your poor grade, and I gave a huge exaggeration, you're correct, but if you have a poor grade, and then you get a B, you're automatically renewed for 5 years, even though that B was only for 1 year.
You're recognized. So her question is, if you get, in the previous 5 years, you get Ds and Cs and one F and whatever, and then you get one B, in the most recent year, what happens? You're recognized.
Thank you. So in the most recent year, yes, you could be renewed. Absolutely. However, and I believe we have some speakers that actually could speak to that point with multiple years at not receiving. However, you know, there is a point that at some point and you continue to have that D grade, it probably won't be renewed. It probably won't remain open.
Okay, I'm going to go to another question.
I have a question first, though. Okay, I'll follow up a question. So you said, Rep. Rizzo, if a school gets two Fs, a charter school gets two Fs, it's closed, correct? Am I right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What happens to a government-run school if it gets two Fs? Is it closed?
Currently, sir, to the best of my knowledge, no, it is not. It is put on remediation plans.
Okay, thanks. You can go ahead and next question.
Okay, so I'll address this section in my closing comments debate because I disagree with you on that one, but then I have a very big concern because, first of all, I need to say my school district is an incredibly charter-friendly school district. Of our over 260,000 students, we have 40,000 students that choose charter. We embrace charters. We love that they have a choice. I have a municipal charter that's the best, I think, in the state, in my opinion, very, you know, my subjective opinion. But never have I seen impact fees going to a charter school. So to explain the way it works, impact fees come to the school district based on a service area. There's a whole statute written up like this. Mm-hmm. The service area is where the residential is going to take, where it's going to happen. When it goes to that place, you're going to have impact fees based on the student generation rate, on the number of units, single family, multifamily. And then it goes, as a matter of fact, there's always litigation because they actually want that to go to the service area. The service area are the schools within that boundary. Charter schools have open enrollment. How are you going to now give, for the first time ever, because charter schools have PICO funds, how are you going to give charter schools now impact fees and capital dollars? How are you even going to determine what their proportionate share is when enrollment hasn't even happened? We have a charter school that opened up in one of our cities, and almost the whole enrollment is exclusively out of that neighborhood. And so you're going to get, in your scenario in this bill, that charter school would get impact fees, and the impact fees are the student growth in that designated service area. So how can this be sound policy?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative, what this aims to do is make sure that the counties are using the fees in the areas where there is growth. And if there is growth because of a charter school, what we want to say here is that the county must use those impact fees there in that immediate area. A lot of times, and in my home county, certainly we hear the stories where impact fees are used all the way 30, 20 miles away from where the development is happening. And so this is aiming to focus those fees where the impact truly is.
Can I follow up?
Yep.
Reference. That would be a different statute than to create this number, not this statute, because you could say you're only going to give it to that service area. That's a different statute of law. and it's silent on charter schools. What you're doing here is actually giving the charter schools impact fees with no correlation as to whether or not they're going to have those students. You have students.
Is there a question?
Yes. Well, I was responding. So how can your premise is not correct. Your premise in your bill is that charter schools are going to get it. And how can that be to secure the service area? Do you, let me go through it then so it's questions. Charter schools are open enrollment, correct? And lottery.
You're recognized.
There is a cap on them. They are lottery, but they are open enrollment up until the point that they are capped.
And charter schools get to, their lotteries are usually from all over the county.
You recognized?
Yeah, yes. This
okay.
Is open.
So if your premise is you want to keep impact fees in the area, and I have a charter school that my lottery doesn't draw on anyone from that residential area, then how can they get impact fees?
You're recognized.
The impact fees typically have quite a lag to them from the time that something is built to the time that something happens. And at that point, you do know whether there is growth in a particular area or not. As you know, both of us come from districts with a very high population density, and typically we know where it's going to grow. Now, if you're talking about a rural area or a suburban area that is about to grow, again, the municipal planners have quite an idea as to the residential dwellings that are popping up all around it, and thereby what the impact would be for a particular school.
Okay, you're,
you
I'm
have a follow-up. You can disagree, but do you have a question?
No, I'm okay.
All right.
Because I love
any Ranking Member Wilhite, you're
recognized. We've been going back and forth in the elevator.
Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll expand on that just a little bit. You and I spoke about this, and you know, I think 15 years is quite a large increase for that renewal. Where did you come up with the number of 15 years of that automatic renewal if they were at just a B-rated school?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, Ranking Member, the 15 years is already part of statute. The 15-year was already enacted, I don't know the exact date, but probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. And so we have a 15-year and a 5-year. And again, but I know that there are some concerns with the 15-year, and that's something that I wanted to kind of explain and sort of have that conversation with any member that has a, you know, that finds it surprising, but it's in statute already.
Okay. Hello.
Yes, you're recognized.
And to expound on Representative Barberman's questions there a few minutes, you know, when you said about impact fees being in the area and you talked about mitigating things around the charter school, I can understand if we said that money would be used for roads or traffic signals or deceleration lanes, turning lanes, all those different things. But you specifically go into this, say, where the charter school would be able to use that money for school facilities, which means construction of the physical buildings, in my opinion. So are you saying that you're going to use tax dollars now to build facilities on the charter school property then, not just mitigate the impacts in the area, what normally people would think impact money is used for?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, and if you look at page 14 of the bill draft, you'll see that it will say, shall be owned by a public or nonprofit entity. Local school district retains the right to monitor and inspect such facilities to ensure compliance with state requirements. If a facility ceases to be used for public educational purposes, either the facility shall revert to the school district subject to any debt owed on the facility, or the owner of the facility shall have the option to refund all educational impact fees utilized for the facility to the school district. That's part of my response to your question. The other part is that, yes, it's time that we begin, and part of this bill does address that, to really understand that students that attend charter schools are public school students, just like students that go to a traditional public school. And so I think that's really the crux of this, is that those, all of us as taxpayers, as residents of Florida, we all pay taxes. Public schools, charter schools, they're publicly funded. And so I think that yes, those impact fees do deserve to be used where they should be. And some of it would, in some cases, go to that. I believe we do have some speakers that probably could speak a little more precisely to the questions that my colleagues have.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
My question is if the so are the facilities that are on a government-funded charter school going to then be, if they're using impact fees paid for by the developer tax dollars, are they then going to be owned by that? Now, you said they revert, but will they be owned, or will they be labeled or named in an LLC or a private corporation under that charter school?
You're recognized.
I would have to do a little bit more research on that to get the specific. I don't want to say something that is false. Again, there are some speakers that may be able to answer that, but but Representative, I will get the black and white answer to your question.
Okay, thank you. Oh.
All right, and you good?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Williams, did I see you had some questions? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you spoke about growth for the impact fees, who's determined that area that we see the growth is? Who determines that that will be the school that the children will actually enter into for the impact fees that they're willing to give to the school?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. You know, that's a very dynamic process when you're talking about, you know, as you're fully aware, where a charter school is to be approved, the general area where it's going to be housed, what is going on all around it? Will it have capacity to be able to remain open? So I believe that the answer to your question is people within the counties will know where this is happening. But the thing is this, that according, going back to one of the questions that Rep. Bartleman had, the growth in that school will be tracked and noticed. And so, again, the impact fees will directly be used in that area that school is being built and grown and operated. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Are charter schools able to enter in a local agreement?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I would ask a little more specificity on the question.
Go ahead, Representative Williams. He asked for a little more specificity.
When we have the charter schools that's coming into different areas, are they able to make agreement with different entities, say the school board itself, the counties, the cities? Are they able to make an interlocal agreement using partnership?
You're recognized.
Thank you. As far as a governmental body, really the sponsor is the body that makes the interlocal agreement kind of with the charter operator. There might be some articulation agreements and things like that. There may be some collaborative agreements with entities such as schools, universities outside, things like that, businesses outside. But I'm not sure if a traditional, what we would think of as an interlocal agreement between a school and something else other than maybe like a certificate of occupancy or something like that, would be what we're looking for.
Mr. Chair?
Yep, you're recognized.
We have Pembroke Pines, which has a previous interlocal agreement, and that's the charter school. I'm speaking of, you know, how are charter schools able to do certain things, but the public schools are not? We're trying to come to some type of agreement of if charter schools are allowed to make interlocal agreement, will public schools also be able to be on that same page?
Representative Williams, I don't think this bill deals with government schools, but yeah. Representative Rizzo, you're certainly able to answer the question.
Thank you. Well, with what you brought up with City of Pembroke Pines, City of Pembroke Pines is actually the sponsor of one of the of its charter school, and there are municipalities around the state that do have that. There are also, for example, in Miami-Dade County, there's charter schools that are operated solely by the county, the LEA, Miami-Dade County Public Schools. In that sense, yes, they do have their interlocal agreements vis-a-vis the charter operator or the sponsor of it. So in that sense, they do. I just don't know if anything really that we're talking about is germane to this bill.
You're recognized.
I'll let someone else ask some questions. Okay. Then I'll come back. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Fine. And thank you, Rep. Rizzo. In reference to the scenario like a growing district like mine, that you've visited our area multiple times and you've seen the growth in South County. So when we spoke about when we first heard the committee in the first committee stop, we had that conversation about being able to work with the municipalities to ensure that we are thoughtful with our growth and infrastructure. Was there, at its second stop, was there an amendment to the bill that would address those concerns that we spoke about? And if there were, would you show us what line it would be in?
Rep. Valdez, I'll recognize him to answer that question in a minute if you still want to ask it. This is the second stop for the bill. So the bill originally was heard in Secondary Education and Career Development Subcommittee. We are the Appropriations Subcommittee, and the bill will have a third stop in the full Education Committee before it's eligible to go to the floor. And traditionally, I mean, you don't have, it's just sort of a tradition that there aren't a lot of policy amendments put on in the appropriation stop. It's just a tradition. There can, it's not against the rules, but so this is the second stop for the bill.
Thank you for that clarification, because on the analysis, it shows that its second stop would have been Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee. So that's what was misleading.
And I think the answer is that for whatever reason, the reference was removed. When a bill gets amended, it goes back to the Speaker's office, and then they sometimes say, well, we don't need that reference anymore. So
thank you.
I do not believe the bill was heard there.
Well, thank you for that. I guess maybe my wish would have been that this document would have been updated so that when we could have reflected the question correctly. So based on that, I guess you haven't done the amendment yet, and we'll see it next time. All righty. Answer my own question. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative, but we certainly will, you know, I will speak with you a little more about it all, but yes, there was a committee of references. The chair said that was removed.
Okay, additional questions. Anyone else want a first bite at the apple before I go back to Ranking Member Wilhite? No, Representative Wilhite, Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think talking about public schools is right here, because I think, as Representative Rizzo said, charter schools are public schools. So any discussion around public schools is the same as this in my mind. We don't get to pick and choose when we say charter and private, public and charter. They're all the same then, as you just said. But my bigger question to you is on line 62 through 75, can you give me another scenario where a secretary or a department head can choose the members of a new commission, yet have to be confirmed by the Senate then?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it's pretty much what we've got here is the verbiage in the bill that, yes, that if this bill passes and becomes law, then a new alternative authorizing body will be created. And again, the Commissioner of Education will select them, and they must go before the Senate to go ahead and be approved, to be vetted and voted upon and approved that way.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
And I'm sorry, Representative, if my question wasn't as specific. Do you know of another scenario where a secretary or an appointed person has the ability to appoint people but still needs confirmation by the Senate? I've heard of governor appointments all day long, right? So would this be more realistic that the governor would appoint this new commission, be confirmed by the Senate, and then be enacted and put in place?
I mean, it's not really the subject of the bill, but you're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Chair. Currently in Florida, I don't know. And maybe I'll sit on a civics course and ask that question of a professor or a teacher. I will find the answer out for you, and perhaps someone here may be able to speak to that. I do know, however, that in other states that they do have authorizing bodies like this, I believe, and I will get that confirmation for you, that that is a process as well.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, seeing none, we do have a number of public, there are no amendments. We have a number of public testimony cards today. We're going to start with Chris Moya, representing Charter Schools USA, who is a proponent. Mr. Moya, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. Just to answer a handful of questions and maybe separate a few things, I think we're conflating a couple things in here. First and foremost, no money is going to a charter school. Let that sink in for a second. No money is going to a charter school. The charter school does not have any money from the state. The funds follow the child. The charter school company opens that charter, if the nonprofit board opens that charter and no child shows up, $0. Doesn't happen. So there are no funds being transferred or sent to a charter school. That's the first point. The second point is impact fees come in different shapes and forms. A developer goes to do a development like Southwood right here in Tallahassee, and there's impact fees for concurrency and roads and fire and whatnot. If that's going to produce a certain number of students to impact the school district, then there's impact fees for the impact on the school district. What the language in this bill is saying is if Southwood is going to build 1,000 homes and that might produce 1,000 student stations that are needed, that those impact fees should stay there where the impact is actually happening. And the language in the bill actually says it's pro rata. So when a charter school starts with 250 seats, only one fraction goes for each one of the 250 seats. And as enrollment grows, those impact fees would grow along with it, going to pay for the offset of having those student stations built there. So I wanted to separate those two because it seemed like we were getting caught up on the charter creating impact fees, and that's not really the case.
Okay, thank you. Oh, yes, Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Your premise, and I agree, the money, the first part, you're correct, it follows a kid. Your premise on impact fees are given to school districts to build schools in that geographical area. You are now saying we're going to build a charter school in that same geographical area with no guarantee of enrollment, first time ever, and take the impact fees. And I don't understand how you can say that. You have a lottery system. How are you in good faith for every member here who is in an area that's for growth? Have a conversation with your school district about how important it is to get your impact fees and use them to build the new schools. Now you're going to ask us to somehow share impact fees without guaranteed student enrollment with a for-profit company that's building a that hasn't built their building yet even, but is building their building, which is privately owned, or using a rental. Like, I want to be a partner with you guys, and this whole bill, I see your point why you want the third party, but this your impact, tell me how your impact fee is logical and how it won't hurt the school districts.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not worried about the school district.
You're worried about yourself.
I'm worried about the students. And the fact of the matter is that
time for debate will be when we get to debate. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. The fact of the matter is right now there's $4.4 billion in local funds on a recurring basis every single year that offsets the capital outlay for the school districts. I'll remind every member here, charter schools do not have any recurring funds of any kind for any student in the entire state. We're subject to the state appropriation every year. So one group of students has $4.4 billion at their disposal, and the other entity, the public charter schools and their students, have zero recurring. And when you do the math on that, we average out from PICO, from capital outlay, at about $425 per student, and at the local level, dividing that $4.4 billion, it's around $3,000 per student. So there's a massive disparity. I'd also state that the for-profit company is not involved in this. The nonprofit board only has enough funding if they get enrollment and they can lease a building, they can purchase a building, they can do a number of things, but there's not a large sum of money that goes to pay for the construction of a building up front. It simply doesn't happen.
I recognize you for a follow-up, but not the time to debate with the questioner. So if you have a question for him, you can ask that. But obviously, we'll have debate, and I'll recognize you when we get to debate.
I'll wait for debate.
Okay. Yes, Representative Wilhite, Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said that no charter school has recurring fees or recurring money. Would you not agree that a local referendum that collects a 1 cent sales tax that is now being shared with the charter schools in Palm Beach County is not recurring money?
Through the chair.
You're recognized.
Absolutely. Once the courts ruled that the language could not exclude charter school students, as the language actually said in that case, it was then shared, but only after a court ruling.
Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for a
follow-up. But it is true now, as I just said. Would you not agree that they are getting recurring money now? I'm not contradicting you. Your initial statement said no charter school in the state of Florida gets recurring money. If a local referendum is passed by any school district, they do get recurring money from that then.
You're recognized.
It is true for the life of that bond or that referendum, which typically has to be renewed every 4 to 5 years.
Correct. Second one, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
And I'm just trying to understand. And listen, I have voted for charter schools and local communities and put them in place. And my concern is when you and the money should follow a child everywhere, no matter where they go. The difference here is that you said that impact fees are usually put in place by a developer for potential growth and development and needs and the impacts of the community. There's no guarantee that, as you're in your scenario, that 250 kids would be in that charter school, because potentially that charter school wouldn't even be thought about yet. Because I don't know anybody that's going to put money down in a potential growth area. They usually come in usually a little later because they feel a need in the area.
Is there a question?
So how, yes, sir, I'm getting to it right now. So if there's zero kids that are going to go to that charter school, and that charter school is not proposed, and all those impact fees are spent prior to that charter school open, they'll get zero once that charter school is open of impact fees?
You're recognized.
So if the, I want to make sure I follow the scenario correctly. If the impact fees are charged, they sit with the school district, at which time the charter would open, the charter would usually apply for 250, slots. And then when they would then ask for, once the student ID number is there, getting their proportionate share of those impact fees.
Follow, Mr. Chair, just to clarify. But if no charter school was applied for when those impact fees were collected and spent on the impacts in the area and they were used on their traditional school, then they would get none if no application was filed?
You're recognized.
Yeah, I think in that case, the government-run school district would keep the money.
Okay, thank you.
I will, but you had one bite already. Rep. Andrade wants in. Representative Andrade, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Moore, I've been a little bit confused by the outrage at the impact fee discussion, because my understanding of current state law, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and this portion isn't being amended at all in current law, that to the extent the charter school facilities are specifically created to mitigate the educational impact created by the development of new residential dwelling units, and this is where the amendment comes in, a proportionate share of cost per student station of those impact fees required to be paid must be designated. Currently, in Florida law, it says may be designated, and the amount is not specific or proportionate. It says some of or all. What's not written is or none could be paid to that charter school, which has been specifically created to mitigate educational impacts from development. Am I reading that correctly?
You're recognized.
Yes, sir, you are.
So
that's for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. So really the only change here is that a very vague determination of how much impact fees are going to be given to that charter school, which was specifically created to mitigate the results of development, and it will become specific to the proportionate number of students they are actually helping to mitigate.
You're recognized.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Rep. Bartleman, you're recognized.
May to must is a really big change.
Is that a question?
Yes. I'm going to say it right. So you said, here's your question. You said that if the 250 children came, impact fees are for the area. Your schools are open lottery schools.
Question.
You cannot, is it possible that you could open a school and not have one student from the residential area that the impact fees impact?
You're recognized.
Absolutely possible.
Okay. That's my whole point.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you
for testifying. Okay, next. And by the way, I mean, again, most of these are waves, but if you feel the need to add something, given all these questions, you're welcome to. Christian Camara with the Florida Charter School Alliance, waves in support. Shan Goff with the Foundation for Florida's Future, waves in support. Philip Suderman with Americans for Prosperity, waves in support. Ethan Merchant with the National Coalition for Public School Options, waves in support. Nancy Lothar, representing Florida PTA, wishes to speak as an opponent of the bill. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Mr. Ranking Member, members. I'm Nancy Lothar, rising in opposition to this bill on behalf of Florida PTA. One of our long-established member-approved position statements expresses our firm belief that charter schools should fall under the authority of and be accountable to the local school board. And the establishment of an alternate charter school authorizer, as well as additional new language, renders this authority moot in our estimation. This bill allows school boards, school districts to exercise all of the scut work with very little of the decision-making power. I'm going to focus on my own experience as a member of an advisory committee to my school district. It is a volunteer group that reviews audits, external audits, internal audits, regular traditional school audits, charter school audits. The members of the committee are financial experts, attorneys. My contribution has been to give them some insight into previously passed or current pending legislation. Several cases have come before us in the last several years that I think should give you pause. And one case, for example, there was a charter school whose board chair authorized a six-figure expenditure in favor of his own company. It was a no-bid expense, and this was technically for emergency repairs. We examined that. In another instance, there was a charter school that within a few months of getting its approval for a renewal of charter doubled its rent. That is therefore money that was going to the management company as opposed to the classroom. And then there is a more recent case of a charter school which after two successive grades of D, rather understandably, began to lose enrollment. They have not, despite a number of administrative changes, been able to raise that enrollment again. And their current deficit net position is at a negative $5 million north. They are not in a situation of deteriorating financial condition or under a technical situation of financial emergency, in other words, not able to make payroll or something like that, simply because of forgiveness on the part of the charter management organization for the past several years of all management fees, the waiving of something called incremental rent, and that is about $400,000 a year. And in addition, the loan of additional monies to this particular charter school. Their total fund balance as of our last audit report was $68,333. So the question that this particular bill raises for us, and the concern, is that if indeed the good cause exemption is excised from current statute, if a district is not able to ask for further financial information on a school that is clearly in trouble and where students may shortly have to return to their neighborhood school or another school. What good does this actually do the students? What responsibilities are owed to the taxpayer? And so that is one of the concerns. This is the Appropriations Committee. I wanted to address this specifically with finances in charge, but this is one of the reasons that we do oppose this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for appearing today. We're going to move on. Shea Pearson, representing themselves, waves in opposition. Samantha Hauer, representing themselves, waives in opposition. Lair Allen, representing themselves, waives in opposition. And Janet Moody, representing themselves, waives in opposition. Okay. With that, we are in debate. Members wish to debate. Ranking Member Wilhite, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listen, Representative Rosa, you came to me with a lot of to talk about this, and we talked about a lot of things. I still have a lot of concerns with this bill. So I'm gonna support it today because you have questions, and you'll get back with me with answers. I know you will. I will say up front, though, I don't know another state that has this confirmation process or this committee, this kind of committee to oversee this. Again, as I said a minute ago, government-funded run charter public schools, these are government-funded as well, too. And we're talking about giving tax dollars or impact fees money that was raised for the government to do governmental things and stuff. So this idea that we keep going back and forth with saying government or public-funded or whatever, they're all the same. Because what they are is they're all houses of education that serve our kids and educate our kids for the future. All right? So I wish we would get over some of these specific words that we try to explain them. The difference is we just like, I think the difference where we have, the differences that we have are how we get there and what we do to make sure they're done right. And you and I talked about how long it takes to site a school and how far they should be set and those different things. And do they have PE and who owns those buildings or who they're run by? Those are philosophical differences that I think we should come together better on and answer these better, because at the end of the day, I know this committee and the people on this committee care about one thing, and that's that kid or that child that's in that school. So again, if you would please get back to me with some of those answers, and we'll see how this progresses through, and I know we'll have an open dialogue, and thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Fine. And I do appreciate all of the charter schools in the district, in my district. The ones I've closed, though, for IRS fraud, the guy who got shot because he was in a criminal enterprise, the one that didn't pay their teachers, the one that didn't feed their kids, those are the ones I dislike. But for the most part, all of them were very, very good. But those tax dollars did go to them. And have you ever, if you've closed a charter school, which we have, you never get recoup any of those dollars. And as it pertains to a building, you can say, well, if they do a $1 million infrastructure change to a rented building, you're never going to recoup that $1 million. We never get the computers back because no one can find them. So there are serious issues when it comes to accountability with tax dollars. But I want to be a friend to charter schools because I think we are all in the same boat. I have an overall problem with creating a third party, because I am a friendly charter school county, and I can't imagine why someone would give them a hard time when we all are in the same boat. So I see why you're doing that. I, as an educator, have an issue with just looking at 1 year as opposed to 3 years for that renewal period. I think that's not good policy. On the floor last year, I read a list to everyone, and all of you were there, of every public school that was closed that was an F, along with what county they came from. So public schools did get closed, and we'll send you that list again, and whether or not it's in your county. As it pertains to the impact fees, capital dollars do not follow the child in any scenario. Not in our county, not in that. That's not how we operate. Capital schools are for the building of facilities. So honestly, I'm fighting for everyone who's a small county here, because my county's built out. I'm not getting impact fees. So you guys pass it, but I think you need to think about this. If I'm going to build a school, I need those impact fees to build the school as Broward County, or I don't want to say Broward, I'll say Dade County since that's yours. As Dade, don't even say Dade, as Leon County. Wait, who didn't break the rules? Somebody. Flagler County. Flagler County. They didn't break the rules. So that's for you, Chair Fine. I'm keeping it. So anyway, Flagler County, I want to build, right? How are you going to, I'm not going to have the money to build the school, because I'm going to have a charter school saying, no, I'm coming in and building. But they're not going to guarantee the enrollment from that area. They can't, because they're going to be an open lottery system. So you're going to have competing groups dividing much needed resources for children, not for schools, for children to build that school. So what I would say for everyone who has a county that's gonna, is going to need to address this, not my county. I'm going to let you all, I fought enough. I gave you enough heartache. I gave that gentleman heartache. I think you need to go back and really look at how this is going to impact the growth in your area, because you're not going to have enough money to build your school because this gentleman or someone else is going to come in and say, no, no, we're going to take care of that. We're going to do the charter school. So I just think all of you need to look at that and how that's going to play out in the future, because we have not, it has not been, and maybe this is where you want to move, because I'm going to be done with this. I don't think that's good public policy, because the impact fees are for those kids that are generated for that surrounding area. And when you have charter schools that have open lottery and take children from anywhere, and I know we have schools of choice, I get that. But it's just, I have an issue with that. But I'm going to go off that point. You guys, I'm not even going to fight you this on the floor about that issue. Impact fees, I'm done. I shared it with everybody here. It's up to them. It doesn't impact me. It doesn't impact you, because we're built out. So thank you all very much. And I told you I was going to be down today because of that. But thank you very much.
All right. Representative Andrade, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Rizzo, for this bill. I believe that this bill is necessary because of some very obvious things that were stated today. The fact that in the state of Florida, there are apparently charter-friendly counties, and meaning there are charter-unfriendly counties, is the exact reason why a bill like this is necessary. Because, yes, charter schools are public schools. They're government-funded schools that provide opportunities for unique, you know, teaching experiences for students that may need it. There are examples in my region, which is not fully built out, obviously. We've got a lot of land, a lot of growth going on, where parents got fed up because a school district didn't commit the funds to go build new schools. And so those parents rallied around and created very successful charter schools in the panhandle in response to the lack of movement from their school district in building the schools that their children needed. So opportunities like this to make sure that we are treating charter schools like public schools, publicly supported schools, and not treating them like an attack on this imaginary zero-sum game that is our education system in the state of Florida is a perfect opportunity. And I look forward to continuing supporting this bill in the future. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak in debate? Okay. I just have a couple comments. I, too, am a big fan of charter schools. Most of the overwhelming majority of charter schools in my county happen to be in my district, and I've visited many of them, and they do an extraordinary job. And they're all, the one I'm thinking of in particular, they've opened a second one. They just cannot meet the demand. So many children want to attend the school. And frankly, if we lived closer to it, we would consider sending our children to that school versus where they go. But while they are all public schools, they are not treated the same. And I think we need to acknowledge that. Charter schools close. Government schools generally, not always, but generally do not. People stop going to a charter school, or a charter school performs. We hold charter schools to an infinitely higher standard than we do government-run schools, because the ultimate accountability is whether you can be open or not. And that is a huge difference that we need to remember. I support the bill in large part. And look, I'm going to sound like a broken record, and you're going to hear a lot about it tomorrow. But what we've learned over the last year is there are school districts we can't count on to do their job. And maybe we can count on them on some things, but not on other things. So having a check on that process to make sure there's an outside place that can charter schools, I think is something that will create a check on those who may wish to get a little bit squirrely in how they do their own job. So I applaud you on bringing this bill forward. And with that, you're recognized to close.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. So many of the words that we just heard really summed it all up. And I'm just going to just make a few points. Ranking Member Wilhite, thank you, wherever you may be.
He had to present a bill. No rudeness to
you. For his words, because they ring true. Representative Andrade, you, as you do so often, you put a focal point to an argument. And really, I couldn't have said it any better with your argument about impact fees and how they should be directed and how this bill will make them directed. Chair Fine, you said it. They close. When a charter school does not operate well and does not meet the mission and the commitment to its students and its stakeholders, it closes. Period. It does. Representative Bartleman, you know, we talked about choice because there's a lot there, and we can continue, you know, that conversation, and I love it. And I love you too. you know, and you said something that is, you know, impactful here, is that if a charter school opens, what happens if the kids don't come? It has open enrollment. It could take anywhere from the county. It could choose students anywhere in the county or it's open to. You know, I come from the most choice-friendly district, and I say friendly, quote-unquote, district of the 67 counties in Florida. 60% of all the students enrolled in a public school, be that charter or traditional public, are choice students. They choose the school that they are going to attend, which means they don't necessarily attend their neighborhood schools. That's a thing of the past. This is a thing of the future. Choice is a wave of the future. It is here. Charter schools are just one portion of that movement. Thank you all for everything that we've talked about, the authority and responsibility. The oversight of all charter schools still is the purview of the LEA, of the local education agency, in this case, the school districts. They still have oversight over them. So we're not cutting them out. This bill, like we talked about, is about these things. And I know that we have some debate. We have some questions that I'm going to answer. We have a lot of heartfelt concern. But I do believe that this is a great bill, and this is the way that we should move forward. And with that, I ask for your favorable vote here today, and I close.
Representative Rizzo, having closed on the bill, Adrian, please call the roll.
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Alupis?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bartleman?
No.
Bush?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Maney? McLean?
Yes.
Roach? Smith?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Willite? Williams?
No.
Bill favorable, sir.
Members, by your vote, CS for HB 865 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Members, with that concludes our meeting for today. We are scheduled to meet next Wednesday, February 16th, from 10:30 to 12:30. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative McLean moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.